Welcome to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now we're going to talk with a family law attorney who's been at it for more than 20 years. She's based in Brentwood, Tennessee, and her name is Connie Regeli. And in fact, there's a Facebook group called Innocent Families Against Family Law Corruption. And Connie, unfortunately, is going to talk with us. I say it's unfortunate because there are situations where a lot of families are under attack. And sometimes it could be a situation where the state or the government actually has a vested interest in the family not staying together, but in being torn apart because then they get more money for foster children. Can you explain this to us, Connie? It just sounds so horrible.
Well, it is horrible. And, you know, I've been practicing family law for over 20 years, and I have seen some huge shifts in the dynamics of what's happening to families in the court system. And in particular, the biggest shift I've seen is how the child welfare agencies are handling families. And, you know, I started seeing children removed from their homes for poor reasons or bad reasons or accidental injuries. And I started asking myself, what's going on? I started talking to legislators, trying to get to lawmakers. Nobody would listen to me. And so, you know, a wise person once told me, follow the money. And I started looking at the money trail that goes into the states. And our federal government has created a federal funding schemes that has developed since 1974 with layer upon layer upon layer of little of laws that have just changed a little bit at a time, that this money that they're directing to the states, it's created a horrible incentive. And the incentive is to take children out of homes and put them in foster care. And it's really important that every American citizen know that on any given minute in the United States, there are 400,000 children who are in the foster care system.
And in some cases, these are children where their home is basically fine, but there's a false accusation or something like that. Give us an example. Tell us a story without any names.
Okay, sure. I have lots of examples, but I'll give you one that some people have probably seen in the news lately, and these are not clients of mine, but in the news has been the story about a family in Kentucky. They had 10 children, and they were basically living off the grid. They had had a little shack in the woods, and they were teaching their own children and growing their own food, and somebody reported them to DCS for neglect and educational neglect, and they went and they picked up all 10 children. Not an injury, not a bruise, not a bump, not a scar, not even a complaint that the children had been abused. Now, that's starting to get pretty scary. I had another case where I represented a young mom a couple years ago. She had a child who was 7 months old, and he rolled off the bed while she was folding the laundry. I mean,
yeah.
You know, most
people. Oh, those things happen all the time. I've got a granddaughter. She's so cute, but she can, you know, fall down, things like that.
Right, or roll off a couch or roll off a bed. Well, he rolled off the bed, and the next day, he seemed to be fine. He kind of cried. Next day, he seemed to be fine. His leg was kind of swollen. So it was even the morning after that that she called the doctor, and she said, I just really want to bring him in and get him checked up. She took him to the doctor's office. He sent her immediately to Vanderbilt Children's Hospital emergency room, and they x-rayed his leg, and he had a break in his leg right above his knee and then a little chip right below his knee. And so immediately, they were kept at the hospital for 7 hours while they were interrogated. They were allowed to leave the hospital with the child, and then 5 weeks later, DCS shows up at their home with a police officer and tells them that if they don't place their child in the home of a relative and only have supervised contact with the child, that they're going to take the child. Now, in their case, of course, they freaked. This mom was 19 years old. I mean, she'd never had so much as a parking ticket, and so she had to go to Knoxville, and, you know, she was lucky. Her husband had a sister who lived there, so they could maintain that until they could get a hold of me. Now, only because I had a very good contact with a doctor in Boston who could look at those x-rays and say, yes, that child could have injured his leg rolling off the bed the way the breaks were. But, I mean, other than that, they had a doctor from Vanderbilt who was willing and ready to come in to say that the only way that baby could have had that break in his leg is if the mother picked him up by the leg and slung him around her head.
Oh.
I mean, so you have these different medical opinions, and it goes further. I mean, it goes into psychological opinions. You know, they may think, you know, we used to call it ADHD, you know, when a a child who's young and can't sit in their seat at school. I had a recent case. They said, well, this child has animalistic behaviors, so he must be being caged while he's at home. I mean, they make that much of a leap to try to remove a child from a home. It's pretty scary.
Huh. Now, as far as foster care, you know, there's horror stories out of that, too. I mean, you talk to anybody who actually grew up in that kind of system, and they have all kinds of stories to tell.
Oh, yeah, they are. And, you know, the way this funding scheme has evolved over the years, we now have foster care as an industry. We have child abuse as an industry and as a sub-industry within that.
What do you mean by child abuse as an industry? What do you mean by that?
Well, because you have so many people who are receiving the benefits of this federal funding for the sole purpose of promoting the foster care industry or promoting the removal of children. So you have people who are court-appointed to represent the parents. They get paid out of taxpayer dollars. You have guardian ad litem are paid out of taxpayer dollars. You have psychologists who get paid by the states. You, of course, have all these agency workers that I don't even know how many agency workers they are, but they're all on taxpayer dollars. You have medical doctors who get not only the medical expenses, but they also get paid to be expert witnesses. So then you have the foster care system. And, you know, a lot of people for years, they did not know that foster care is an industry. These are private companies. These are private for-profit companies. They're now being so bold as advertising all over the internet in trying to get people to sign up to be foster parents. And here's something that's really twisted. A foster parent will get the following things. They will get free daycare, free medical care, and they'll get a payment from the state for a period of time. And there's other things that they sometimes get if they need it, such as transportation. Well, I had a case recently with a young father, was a high school dropout, and, you know, he had never, ever, ever hurt his child. Nobody ever accused him of hurting his child, but because the child had been injured while she was in the mother's care, they removed the child from the mother, ordered the father to pay child support to the state of Tennessee, and then tell him if he cannot get a full-time job and his own housing and show that he has stable housing, that he is not going to get the child. He's not going to get custody of the child. Now, this is a father who has never, ever, ever injured the child. They then turn around and terminate his parental rights in a court hearing based upon the fact that he did not pay child support to the state of Tennessee and he could not get a steady job, which would enable him to get his own apartment.
Wow, it's just one after another. But what's so sad, what's kind of striking to me, going back to that example with the child with the broken leg, you're not saying that there are some state officials who would say, okay, look, we don't know exactly how this child broke the leg, but there's a vested interest in us yanking this child out of the home and instead putting the child in the foster care system. You're not saying that somebody would actually do that because of the financial motives.
Oh, yes, I am. I am absolutely saying that.
And you've seen this kind of thing firsthand in your
yes.
court work and so forth.
Yes, I am. And you have to drill down to the numbers, and you have to look at the numbers. This Title IV-E funding, which comes out of the Social Security Act, is funding, first of all, it is an unlimited source of funding. Secondly, it is a use-it-or-lose-it funding. And third, you can only use it for children who are put into foster care. So they have to, in their mind, their mentality is, we must have, you know, we must have children go into this system so we can keep the funding going. Now, what does that funding pay for? I mean, it pays for payrolls. I mean, it pays for...
So they're not working themselves out of a job is the bottom line.
Exactly.
It seems like once a child gets caught into the system, or let's say a family gets caught up in the vortex of this whole thing, it must be hard to extricate themselves from it. Is that correct?
Well, it is. It is. Because here's another criteria. The part of this federal funding scheme says that if a child is in the custody of the state for 15 of the last 22 months, then the state must file to terminate that parent's parental rights. They must, by law, to keep their funding, they have to do that. Well, you have to understand that once they get a child in the foster care system, first of all, they have this ride of 15 months. So So they want to keep their numbers up of children who qualify in the system. So they want to keep the child in the system for at least 15 months because that's their free ride. And then if at the end of the 15 month, that months, that parent has not done everything they told them to do, which is a litany of things. I mean, it is parenting classes, it is drug screens. Even if I've had people be ordered to drug screens who are not even accused of using illegal drugs, which is unconstitutional, but they do it. And so when you don't meet, jump through all these hoops and meet all this criteria at the end of 15 months, they will terminate your parental rights. And then when they send that child to an adoptive family or the fosters adopt, which is most of the time the case, the state gets another cash bonus of $4,000.
Wow. It's amazing. You know, the interesting thing about all this is that the breakdown of the family is the reason that America is in so much of a crisis right now. In many different ways, I think that sentence could be upheld. And you're saying, in a sense, there's almost a vested interest in keeping the family broken down in many, many cases.
Absolutely is. And I'll tell you the way I look at this. You know, in the Bible, it talks about how our sins are cast upon nine generations, right? I mean, it just goes on. And I get into these cases and I say, you know what? This is not an immediate crisis. This is a generational crisis. You know, and it's not that I don't believe in adoption. I'm an adoptive parent. My children were all Russian born. They're the same as if they're my own. We love them dearly. I have nothing against adoption. I also have nothing against protecting children who are really in need. But what is in place right now is a system that does not provide for the integrity of the family because of the federal funding. Your state legislators, I have been to my state legislators in Tennessee, but there are other people across this country. We have a group on Facebook that's Innocent Families Against Family Law Corruption. There's over 4,500 members. They are across this entire United States. They have tried to contact their own representatives. They will do nothing because if they correct this system, it is not going to match what the federal government expects them to do. These states are financially dependent upon that money, up to 40% of the budget for that agency. So if they want to cut a dollar out of their federal funding, they're cutting $2 out of their budget. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a use it or lose it mentality.
It's absolutely a use it or lose it financing scheme.
All right, we have about 2 minutes left. What would you like to say that we haven't said?
Well, the one thing I would like for people to understand is we have to do something. They need to become knowledgeable. They need to know what's going on. They need to see any of this stuff that they see going on in the news. They need to understand that our federal government has to change the criteria for funding so that it promotes the rehabilitation of families. We also need to engage in a narrative nationwide about family integrity, how important family integrity is, and what we can do to support the family unit. And then each state must look at creating strong legislation that protects family rights and family advocates in the system.
Since you've gotten involved in all this, have things gotten better or worse? I would imagine worse.
Well, they have gotten worse. I have a reputation in what I do, so I get one of two reactions from the state. They either fold and work with me to reunify or rehabilitate or whatever, or they try to dig their heels in, and then they get sneaky, backhanded, they lie, they do things behind my back that it's horrible. I have filed some federal cases against the state of Tennessee. I have one pending right now for ADA violations of a father who had some disabilities, and they failed to take those into account.
Huh. Do you work only in Tennessee? You only deal with Tennessee clients?
Well, unfortunately, I'm only licensed to practice law in
right.
The state of Tennessee. What I really hope to do and what I'm working for is developing a uniform manual that, because it's all constitutional. I mean, these are constitutional issues, the right to parent. So how to raise all the constitutional issues, how to make sure you get all your evidence, how to make sure that the state protects evidence, because that's another one. Getting rid of, destroying, or hiding evidence is another thing they do to parents.
So if somebody, let's say, listening to us and they don't live in Tennessee and they have a situation where there's a child that's in the system or whatever, and they want to get that child out, and you know, maybe there was something wrong that they did, but maybe there wasn't, who would they contact?
Well,
a Facebook group? Innocent Families Against Family Law Corruption?
Yes, they need to get involved in that group. We can also direct them once they're in there. There are several groups that are set up for the different states. I know there's a state specifically for Iowa, Kentucky, California. So there are some within our innocent families. People have kind of spawned off and created some separate state groups so that they can begin to create a collective intelligence as well. But they need to be knowledgeable of what's going on and what these criteria are that the federal government is looking for. Here's the other thing, just, and I'll just close with this, is another reason this is so difficult is because people who get caught in the system are embarrassed and ashamed, and they think, I don't want people to think I'm a child abuser. Mm. So they need to understand there are hundreds of thousands of people in the very same situation that they are in. And if they want to protect their family and their family unit, they need to get educated and they need to speak up.
So in other words, there are innocent victims who are being accused of being child abusers. Okay, again, Connie Reguli has been our guest. Thank you so much for being with us. Reguli is spelled R-E-G-U-L-I. On the Facebook page, Innocent Families Against Family Law Corruption, for more information. Connie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jerry. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.